What an astounding city we live in. The pride of the state of Michigan, a model for cities all over these United States, a center of innovation, exemplary in risk-taking, focused on outcomes, widely known for results. This is our city, our Grand Rapids, a community to conserve, to advance, to take pride in, a city to fight for, a place to invest for prosperity. Our motto is motu wigit, strength through activity. And what better place to talk about activity than at the State of the City Address? This is my 10th address to the community. And my challenge this year, as it has been every year, is that there is just so much activity, so many powerful visions for the future that condensing them into one speech proves to be a challenge. When we gathered last year, we began a conversation about our youngest citizens, our children. I believe it is our greatest responsibility to ensure that all children are safe, protected, and they have the resources that they need to be fully prepared for college, for work, and for life. Innovation, perseverance, and trained intelligence are the capital of the future. And how well we prepare children to meet those challenges is really a reflection of who we are. Last year, I challenged you to consider three questions and to discuss them throughout the year. First question was, do we value children equally? And are we prepared to prioritize their needs? Secondly, what are the needs of our children? And thirdly, what can we do individually and collectively to address those needs? Wow, did you ever take me up on the challenge? All over the city, in teachers' lounges, online, at service clubs, in church fellowship halls, and places of business all over the city, Grand Rapidians did what we do best. You heeded the call. City commissioners hosted community dialogues in their wards. Mayor's youth council members facilitated discussions in their high schools. Private citizens took up the question in their social groups. I received more comments and emails on this subject than any other. You confronted the questions and you wrestled with the answers. Grand Valley State University, through its Johnson Center for Philanthropy, recorded many of those conversations and organized the responses in a report. The summary of that report is on your table. I encourage you to take it home and read it in full. Dr. George Grant, Dean of the School of the Grand Valley State University School of Social Work, with oversight for the Dorothy A. Johnson Center for Philanthropy, is with us this morning, and we'll take a few minutes to report the results. While Dean Grant is making his way up here, I also want to thank Ruth Stegeman of Grand Valley State University for her efforts on this research, and the Mayor's Youth Council for ensuring a youth voice on the project. In fact, Mayor's Youth Council members, please stand and be recognized. Ladies and gentlemen, Dean George Grant.
Thank you, Mayor Hartwell, for the opportunity to talk a little bit about the report and for the work that you're doing. Good morning, everyone. I have a really short presentation because you do have this at your table, and also the full report is on the Johnson Center website as well, so you can see the entire report. A couple of things that I want to highlight. One was the response. In the report, you'll see it said we have over 750 separate responses, over 250 youth, over 500 adults. Actually, the number is bigger than that because some of the folks who collected information didn't count the number of people that were in the room, and so in that case, we just counted it as one, but it's actually more than that. So it really was an unbelievable turnout. And then we got the information back. And our goal was not to look at it in a way where if it wasn't exactly this way, we had to eliminate it. We wanted every voice, and we wanted to hear every voice. So we worked really hard to do that. So the report, they say that you'll be able to find with the Community Research Institute, which is in the Johnson Center for Philanthropy in the College of Community and Public Service at Grand Valley. So that's my longest sentence of the morning. As you can see at the bottom, that there sort of were six proposed next steps. And I'm not going to go over all six. I'm just going to highlight three things that really jumped out at us and that I want to share with you as we look at next steps. The first one I call address the disconnect. Some of this youth and adults, when they talked about issues that are going on in their community, what they didn't say, we need more of this or we need this kind of service. They talked about the service not being there. Now, a lot of us know that almost every issue in the city, there's somebody working on that. So the disconnect is how do we make sure that the services that we're providing are connecting with the youth and the families who need those services? And what is it that we need to do to help them see that these services are available? And then on top of that, do we need more of volunteering or issues on safety or issues on food, all of those kinds of things? So that was the first one, this area of disconnect. The second one was the stigma of community. And this one, this touched my heart as I read this. And I'm only going to talk about the comments from a number of the youth, not the adults. And the thing that they talked about was that they're living in communities and we identify all of the problems, all of the issues there. And their concern was that because you think the community is so bad, that you think they're bad. And so they're not worth investing in. And when I read that, that hit me. Because they're saying, you know, we have good people in our community, and the majority of people are doing the right thing. But we talk about the challenges and the bad things that are going on. So the stigma of community is how do we make sure that we talk and highlight and celebrate the work that people are doing? And we let our young people know that we're willing to help them achieve their goals and see that there are goals. And then the third one is that celebration. Let's continue to find ways to look at people in the community, not people that we would normally give awards to, that we need to give awards to and celebrate, but those individuals who are giving of their time and their talent and their energy. They're making sure that the children who are walking to school, that nobody's messing with them, and they're there every single day. So if we can find a way to recognize and celebrate those folks, we then tell our youth that we do value their community, we do value what's going on, and by doing that, we let them know that there's a chance. So those are the three things that really stuck out for us as we put this report together. And so let me just say that our young people need hope. And with that hope, that they can then develop long-term goals. And with those long-term goals, they will have a future. And then all of us can celebrate that. So I want to thank you all for giving me just a few minutes to talk about the data. And to the mayor, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Well, good. Thank you so much, Dean Grant, for that report. We're ready now to take the conversation to another level. In a sense, these first three questions were discussion starters and consciousness raisers. Now we need to advance the dialogue more deeply around these three new questions. First, how do we nurture a child and teen-friendly culture in our community where children truly do feel valued? Secondly, how can we demonstrate to children and teens that we will prioritize their needs? And then third, how might the community positively support parents and caregivers and raise the importance of their role within the community? You and I know that talk is not enough. that actions must follow. Words do have power, the power to transform, but words alone won't get us where we need to go. And so I call on each of you to own this moment, to take ownership in your own circle of influence, and to act for our children. Our children need us now more than ever. Let me give you an example of what can be done, what is being done. The city, with leadership from City Manager Greg Sundstrom, set specific outcomes in our sustainability plan to increase the number of youth in city government, after school, and in service learning activities, as well as youth employment. City departments such as engineering, planning, customer service, the city clerk, the city treasurer, traffic safety, offer job opportunities to young people who are trained through the city's LEAD program at our Office of Our Community's Children. Teens learn about how city government works, who their commissioners are, how they can have a voice themselves in the democratic process. Through my Mayor's 50 initiative, then, businesses, such as many that are here today, Cascade Engineering, Express Employment Professionals, SMG, Mindscape, Terry Berry, Vicam, Warner Norcross and Judd, CompuCraft, the YMCA, the Public Library, Dematic, many, many others have stepped forward with the city to offer LEAD students incredible paid work opportunities. Here's what the mother of LEAD student Aaron Thomas wrote to us. The LEAD program serves as proof that it takes a village to raise a child. Your program has given Aaron the confidence and essential skills necessary to reach his academic and career goals. I feel extremely blessed knowing that my son has the ability to be hired on for further work at Dematic. Ms. Safor, thank you for taking the time to write to us, and congratulations to you, Aaron, for seizing this opportunity to shape your future, and to Dematic for not only becoming a Mayor's 50 business, but also assuming full costs of the paid internship. We need more people like Herb Fitzron, the HR director at Dematic, which is a global company here in Grand Rapids, to step up to the plate for young people who would otherwise not likely have such an experience as this. Ms. Safor, Aaron, his great-grandmother, who's celebrating her 86th birthday today, Aaron's father and siblings are with us. Would you please join me in congratulating and thanking them? Great. Good for you, Aaron. And Mr. Fitzron from Dematic is with us as well. Herb, would you please stand and receive our acknowledgement? The city is offering the LEAD program this summer for youth aged 15 through 21 with support from the Grand Rapids Community Foundation. And we're looking for businesses who have not yet been involved with teens to follow Dematic's example. So sign up as a Mayor's 50 business or donate to support the program. There's information, once again, at each of your places at the table. These are the very actions that I'm talking about that benefit our youth. Every person, every entity, every business can take action for our young people. Together, we can be part of a solution to improve the children's lives and sustain a brighter future for all of us. Parents want a safe place for their children to learn after school. This past year, I met with several mayors from across the country with the National League of Cities, and I can tell you that the work that we are doing here in Grand Rapids to support quality after-school programming is a national model. The Wallace Foundation of New York City is investing $765,000 in Grand Rapids to help us build a comprehensive, data-driven system of care touching the lives of our children. We want to be part of, or we want to be confident, rather, that after-school programming at our school sites is continually improving based on a clear set of indicators that measure student success and that produce the very best outcomes for our children. Our partners include the Grand Rapids Public Schools, the Doug and Maria DeVos Foundation, Kent County Regional 4C, Grand Valley State University's Community Research Institute, the Heart of West Michigan, United Way, the City of Wyoming and the City of Kentwood, and all the members who make up our expanded learning opportunities network. Folks, this is difficult systems work, aligning community partners across sectors to address children's needs. It requires creative minds, technical expertise, and good communication so everyone is going in the same direction. Grand Rapids is leading the way thanks to everyone who's involved. But we have more to do. Listen, lead, engage youth, be part of a solution to make sure that all young people, age 0 through 21, are on track for success. Now, last year I told you about a program that was new to me, and that is the Upward Bound program. I explained that this program, run in our community by Grand Valley State University and Grand Rapids Community College, works with high school students to prepare them for college. The program has been in place for 30 years, funded by federal grants, and the results, honestly, are astounding. Children from low-income families whose parents did not attend college are going to college. In fact, 95% of those participating in the Upward Bound program attend college, and they're graduating from college at rates equivalent to their peers in any of the finest school districts in our area. Jim Zawacki of Grand Rapids Spring and Stamping Company joined me in an effort to raise funds to increase the number of students who can participate in this Upward Bound program. The response was honestly quite heartwarming. Business leaders, philanthropists, folks who care about kids stepped up to help. We have business sponsors for 8 more children to participate in the Upward Bound program, and our efforts continue. This morning I have a very special announcement to make. Before I do that, let me say that yesterday I attended a check giving ceremony where AT&T, one of our sponsors for this breakfast, presented a check to the Upward Bound program at Grand Rapids Community College for $20,000. And now I want to invite Mike Price, Chairman and CEO of Mercantile Bank, to join me at the podium for another announcement. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor Hartwell, and good morning, Grand Rapids. I'm very honored to stand in front of you today representing Mercantile Bank Corporation, its employees and directors. We had a tremendous year in 2012, and as we do every year, we look back and say, what are the reasons for our success? And as in every year, we determine that a big portion of our success is the fact that we're a community bank headquartered in the greatest city in the United States, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Yeah. And every year, we try to find a way to give back to the community. And this year, we wanted to go the extra mile if we could. And we tried to come up with an idea for a very powerful financial impact gift. And we called the mayor a couple of weeks ago, and I've known the mayor for a lot of years, and I think you all agree with me. There's no one more passionate about the success of Grand Rapids than George Hartwell, and he was kind enough to come down and sit in our office and brainstorm as to where could we best give a financial impact gift that would move the needle. And he had lots of ideas, but the very first one that came to mind was Upward Bound. And as he explained Upward Bound to us and the goals of Upward Bound, we realized that it really dovetail well with the values of Mercantile Bank. because we understand that to build a strong community, you need a commitment to higher education. We also know that Grand Rapids has a tremendously deep pool of young people who would like to access higher education and may need a little bit of help. So today, I am very honored and proud to tell you that Mercantile Bank has committed $100,000 to expand the Upward Bound program. Thank you very much. And if I could have the program directors from Grand Valley, who would be Arnie Smith Alexander, and from the Community College, Renard Ross, join me on the stage with the mayor. I've got a couple of big checks for you.
$100,000 for Upward Bound. What a commitment. Thank you, Mercantile Bank. And for those of you who are now ready to respond for the challenge, a special account has been set up at the Student Advancement Foundation to receive your gifts. 100% of the proceeds that come into that fund will go directly to Upward Bound programs at Grand Valley State and Grand Rapids Community College. I only wish the director of the Grand Rapids Student Advancement Foundation could be here with me this morning, but the lovely Susan Hartwell is in a warmer place today with her mother in Florida. Now let me tell you about a powerful new initiative that is gaining momentum and will ultimately help us ensure that our kids get exactly what they need and exactly how much they need as they prepare for their future. Collective impact was still a fledgling idea when I brought County Board Chair Sandy Frost Parrish before you last year at this event. She described a concept to organize the community's work to achieve large-scale change with regard to children and their families, to best align children's needs and outcomes, to develop a community plan that would and support that plan through a reconfiguration of community financial resources. And finally, to rigorously measure outcomes of that plan and transparently report those outcomes to the community. I pledged the support of the city and my personal support to this initiative. I'm pleased to tell you that this concept is moving toward reality. For most of the past 8 months, a high-level task force, of which I've been privileged to be a member, has been meeting, soliciting community input, developing a master plan, and then circling back around to the community to check that plan. We've been working with the foremost experts in the field, John Kenia and his team from FSG, and we've created a shared vision, a common agenda that calls for families of children in Kent County to enjoy meaningful and fulfilling lives by achieving self-sufficiency and economic security through high-quality education and community support. We've developed 5 goals that include, number 1, children begin kindergarten ready to succeed. Secondly, students graduate from high school college and career ready. Third, students complete a post-secondary credential prepared for the 21st century economy. Fourth, young adults achieve meaningful careers and are engaged in the community. And fifth, families are supported to ensure that children grow up in stable and loving households that enable them to succeed in and out of school. We've developed a shared strategy and shared metrics, and next we will work together to develop an administrative home, or a backbone, as we're calling it, for this effort. The sole purpose of that backbone organization will be to accelerate change on behalf of children and their families. This new mindset of collective impact will drive our work in Kent County. Public, private, nonprofit organizations will align efforts to the achievement of these goals, and the backbone organization will keep us on track and coordinate widely diverse efforts of our community. Duplication of services will be eliminated, even as holes in services will be identified and filled. Efficiently, effectively, passionately, our entire community will pull together to ensure a solid future for our children. So watch for the launch of Collective Impact this year. It has the potential, I believe, to transform the delivery of all community services for our children. Now, before I leave the subject of our community's children, I want to recognize the work done by our superintendent, Teresa Weatherall Neal, and the Grand Rapids Public Schools Board of Education in the transformation of our schools. Superintendent Neal introduced a transformation plan that is bold and innovative, that focuses on student achievement and maximizes the use of tax resources. The Board of Education took the plan to the public and listened to input and concerns, made responsive changes, and then on a 9-0 vote, adopted the plan. This plan takes an extraordinary challenge and turns it into an opportunity to improve education in Grand Rapids. And isn't that the very essence of transformation? It's not about slashing until you reach your budgetary goal. Rather, it's about innovating, reorganizing, continually improving within the constraints of limited resources. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to join me in thanking Superintendent Neal and the board members who are here with us today. Superintendent Neal. Board members, there, I can go for another hour. I look forward each year to recognizing pillars in our community who are moving the needle on civil rights. I call it the Champion of Diversity Award, and it's been given to individuals, young and old, of every race and faith, from business, education, religion, who have dedicated their lives to ensuring equity in our community. Today, I turn very close to home to honor two men whose lives exemplify everything that Champions of Diversity stands for. I recognized that I needed to look no further than the Grand Rapids City Commission to find this year's champions. I refer, of course, to Commissioner James White and Commissioner Elias Lumpkins. I'll get them up here in a minute, but let me say a few things about these two gentlemen. First of all, Commissioner White. For all of his life, James B. White has worked to heal society. His strategy, as I've learned it and seen it carried out in his work on the commission, has been to gather people together to develop programs and projects and organizations. he has seen that whenever people of diverse ethnic backgrounds come together to work on something that is worthwhile, they come to know and respect one another. Jim has worked internationally as a fact finder in apartheid South Africa and as an organizer of an international peace conference in which 9 nations participated. He walked with Dr. King and he worked on neighborhood initiatives with Malcolm X. Commissioner White is a consummate educator who has taught young people entering ministry, has provided real-world work experience for fifth graders, has developed a program of academic competition for sixth graders. He organized and hosted a citywide children's summit, and he was instrumental in developing Project COOL, renamed now the Youth Employment Program, to provide meaningful and educational summer jobs for urban youth. Jim founded Camp Tall Turf. He developed the model that became Project Rehab. And together with Commissioner Lumpkins and others, he established a scholarship fund that has distributed tens of thousands of dollars to graduating high school seniors. Commissioner Elias Lumpkins Jr. was born behind, as he puts it, the cotton curtain in Redwood, Mississippi, a suburb of Vicksburg, one of the last battle sites in the Civil War. Although his sharecropping parents were divorced, they and his stepfather always encouraged Elias to get an education, something that no one could take away from him. He graduated from Grand Rapids South High. He earned higher education degrees from Grand Rapids Junior College, Michigan State University, and Wayne State University. Commissioner Lumpkins told me, Alice Walker once wrote, "No one is your friend who demands your silence or denies your opportunity to grow." He said, "This is especially true when you're working with and advocating for youth and adults." His love of history and reading led Eli to become an elementary teacher in the Campaw Park and Henry Schools in the Grand Rapids Public School District, and an administrator at South Middle, Grand Rapids Community College, and Kelvin College. He's always been active in public service to his community, St. Luke African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, community-based organizations, and, of course, on the Grand Rapids City Commission. Each experience has enabled him to advocate for our children and youth, as Eli calls them, the trustees of tomorrow. Commissioner Lumpkins, like Commissioner White, has a long list of honors and recognitions, including Giant Among Giants Award of the Grand Rapids Community College. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome this year's Champions of Diversity, Commissioners James B. White and Elias Lumpkins. Now, before I leave this matter of diversity, let me tell you about a new initiative that we intend to launch this year in city government. We know that apart from English, the most frequently spoken language in our community is Spanish. We have translated many documents into Spanish. We continue to look for ways to improve service delivery to a Spanish language speaking community. In fact, every Thursday we have a city radio show on La Interferencia, 810 a.m. on your dial. held cleverly on Thursdays at 8:10 a.m., addressing the issues of interest to the Spanish-speaking community from city government in the Spanish language. But recently, when a large number of Spanish speakers attended a city commission meeting, I was struck by the difficulty that Spanish speakers have in following the proceedings, which take place in a language other than their mother tongue. We have now identified funds and will be bringing a recommendation to the City Commission to provide translation services for City Commission meetings. Whether you are in the audience at a meeting or in your home watching that meeting on television, by June 30th, 2013, you will be able to listen to the City Commission meeting in Spanish with simultaneous translation. I'm very pleased to be able to offer this service, and I believe that we are one of the first cities in the state to do so. Mayor Hopewell, are you doing it? Next, you'll see it in Kalamazoo. Two 2012 was a year of building on our platform of prior sustainability gains, in keeping with our goal of total replacement of coal-generated electrical power with renewable resource electrical power by the year 2020. The city installed a solar energy system on our water department building. That system is now producing 35% of the total energy demand for that building and will pay for itself entirely in 8 years, well ahead of our original schedule. What's better, it was developed using federal grant funds so that no local monies were used. Solar energy is today much more economical than producing wind energy, and it produces power where it can be used at major building sites. So we're exploring the possibility of installing solar panels on other city buildings to capture this free and sustainable energy source. Also today, I'm pleased to announce that the city just received a $30,000 grant for consulting services from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for engineering studies on a large-scale solar installation at the former Butterworth landfill site. That site is ideally suited for this sort of development, and this study will determine if the project can, in fact, be financially viable and at what scale. The City of Grand Rapids is dedicated to achieving affordable, renewable energy and reducing energy consumption and cost. I'm very grateful for the work of Haris Alabashish, Director of the Office of Sustainability and Energy in the City of Grand Rapids, and to the citizens who serve and our city staff who serve on the renewable energy and the energy efficiency teams in City Hall. Our combined sewer separation project, begun in 1993, is nearly complete, and the results are dramatic. We have all but eliminated combined sewer overflows into the Grand River. Now, I mean, when I say all but eliminated, I mean that our overflows have been reduced by 99.8%. Yes. And we'll be done with this project by December of 2016, 3 years ahead of schedule. The river has rebounded as a world-class fishery for salmon and steelhead. Beaches between here and the lakeshore may still close, but now it's for non-point source pollution like in agricultural runoffs. Our more than $300 million community investment in environmental stewardship is paying off in significant ways. For one, it's raised the bar for stewardship among our Grand River partner communities. The second, it's set the stage for visionary thinking about the future of our river resource, like the thinking of our citizens, many of you here in the room today, generated through the Green Grand Rapids planning process. 9 years ago, we started a fall riverbank cleanup in partnership with the West Michigan Environmental Action Council and the Grand Rapids Young Professionals. And now we clean the riverbanks from Walker to Granville through Grand Rapids and Wyoming. This past year, 670 volunteers turned out on a beautiful fall day to clean over 5 tons of trash from the river edges along, if you count both sides of the river, 25 miles of the Grand River and its tributaries. Water quality in the Grand River has not been better in the past 100 years than it is today. We are returning to our river. We're returning to the heart of our city, the watery connector between east and west, between our past and our future. And that's why I'm so excited about the proposed Rapids Restoration Project. When this project is complete, it will, ladies and gentlemen, redefine us, put meaning back into our name, Grand Rapids, serve as a source for civic pride and recreational value for years to come. Indeed, this is the gift of our generations, our generation, to the generations unborn. The majestic rapids restored, the river enlivened. By now, most Grand River Valley citizens know about this project. It was the dream of two visionaries, Chris Muller and Chip Richards. I saw Chip here this morning. I don't know whether Chris is here as well, but these two gentlemen imagined a different riverscape than anyone living in Grand Rapids today has ever seen. They envisioned restoring the river rapids of the Odawa, the Potawatomi, and the Ojibwe. The river rapids beside which Lewis Campaugh and Lucius Lyon built their settlement. It didn't take long for the vision of many others, the vision of Chip and Chris, rather, to become the vision of many others. A stakeholder group was formed under the leadership of Mike Van Gessel and Steve Heacock. The federal interagency Urban Waters Coalition was introduced to the project by Mark Van Putten. The state of Michigan was brought to the table by Eric DeLong and Sam Cummings. And Governor Snyder made special mention of this project just last week in his State of the State speech. And so our Grand River Rapids Restoration Project is born. There's no doubt in anyone's mind that there are difficult challenges ahead on this project. Further developing, checking and rechecking the engineering data, ensuring protection of the upstream stretches from aquatic invasive species, raising a substantial sum of money from the private sector to pay for the redevelopment. But neither is there doubt in anyone's mind that if a city exists on earth that can make difficult things happen, it's our Grand Rapids. We're visionaries. We're problem solvers. And if this thing can be done, we will do it, and we will do it right. I pledge myself to ensuring that every issue is considered and every voice is heard as this process unfolds. Grand Rapids developed a sustainability planning process 9 years ago, and it has served us very well. In fact, I hope you might take the time to view that plan on the city's website at www.grcity.us. Our sustainability plan has been cited by others as a national model for municipal planning. A recent report released by the International City-County Management Association stated, Grand Rapids' sustainability plan is considered one of the most innovative in the nation, with specific environmental, economic, and social sustainability outcomes and targets as goals for all city departments connected to the fiscal plan. And as Steve Ender mentioned earlier, just 3 weeks ago, Bill Moyers cited Grand Rapids among the dozen most sustainable cities in the U.S. Our sustainability plan brings together economic, human, and environmental planning in one document. Each city department takes responsibility for contributing not only in its obvious area of interest and expertise, but in the other areas as well. So, for example, the treasurer has responsibility not just for economic outcomes, but must also pursue goals in the environmental area. For example, paper reduction. And in the human area, such as customer satisfaction and ease of access. We have tied the sustainability plan to our budget process so that outcomes drive decisions. We check the plan each year, or we check our progress, I should say, each year against the plan, and we begin then a new cycle of plan, do, check, act. Last year I reported that we would begin an initiative to help the city, as part of our sustainability planning, to help the city prepare for the impacts of climate change. I told you that we would develop a resiliency plan that would take into account extreme weather events, extended heat waves, heavy rain events, violent storms. Working with our partners at Grand Valley State University and the West Michigan Environmental Action Council, and tying into an international group of cities through the ICLEI, Cities for Climate Protection, we are developing a model resiliency plan, and we've already embedded new work from that plan into our emergency preparedness documents. Here's what ICLEI wrote in their newsletter about the City of Grand Rapids plan. ICLEI strongly encourages its members to mainstream climate and disaster risk reduction into their conventional planning processes, project design, and development decision-making. And Grand Rapids provides a great example of how to go about this work. That from ICLEI. Smart cities today are figuring out how to harden their infrastructure against heat and storms, and they're investing in stormwater management infrastructure to handle those extreme rain events that we're experiencing. Smart cities are figuring out how to best identify who the vulnerable people are and where they are in the community to reach out to them in times of extreme and protracted heat waves. Smart cities are working with their public utilities to protect electrical infrastructure and power transmission infrastructure against violent storms. And because Grand Rapids is a very smart city, you will see all of these matters addressed in our resiliency plan and in our emergency preparedness documents. This doesn't mean that we've stopped working on initiatives that will, we hope, ultimately mitigate the effects of climate change, public transportation, trees and greenways, energy efficiency, renewable energy, alternative fuels, green building design, emissions control. But it does mean that we are acknowledging that a change in climate is already affecting us. Anticipate the vulnerabilities that come from that change, and we're investing wisely in a future that many of us in this room will never see. I want to tell you about another planning initiative that's bearing some fruit for each of us living here in Grand Rapids. In City Hall, we call it transformation planning, and we launched it 2 years ago when the citizens of Grand Rapids gave us your support in a temporary income tax increase. The promise that we made to you, the citizens, was that before the 5-year sunset date of that tax increase, we would throw a rope around city government and wrestle it to the ground. In other words, at the end of the 5-year period, we will have a government that fits the tax resources available to operate it, and that government will be more efficient than ever before. In developing this plan, City Manager Greg Sundstrom and his staff leadership team recommended 76 objectives to bring alignment between revenues and expenses by the year 2016. Additionally, the city set up a transformation fund to reinvest in core city services, to transform them to become fiscally sustainable by 2016. The city created the transformation fund with revenues from the 5-year temporary city income tax and from funds from the state of Michigan. Our turnaround plan is unique in the public sector. We created a 5-year plan, aptly named the Transformation Investment Plan, and we identified owners for each of those 76 objectives, or as we call them, value streams, with a timeline for their transformation. We realized that we needed some outside help, and so we relied on a Citizen Transformation Advisors Council to guide our plan and monitor our work. We formed a group of employees to serve as investment managers to review all the investment requests that would come in to the Transformation Fund. Here's just a few of the elements of the Transformation Plan. We are exploring regional service models for building inspections, property assessments, community development, policing services, fire services, and emergency dispatch, exploring options with our community partners surrounding the city. We're adopting universal building codes with the city of Wyoming and the city of Kentwood to provide opportunities for regional enforcement. We're implementing a 311 customer service and customer relation management system that will significantly improve the delivery of customer services, will improve transparency and accountability to our citizens, our customers. We're building a virtual 24/7 city hall where citizens can seek their services at their convenience, on their timeline. And we're partnering with the private sector and with neighboring jurisdictions to provide many of the municipal services. We publicly report our progress quarterly. We developed an online reporting tool to track the progress of each value stream. We developed an online dashboard to report the city's sustainability progress. And at each city commission meeting, city staff provide updates, reports on progress in their area. We've just passed the halfway point on our 5-year transformation plan. In less than 2.5 years, the temporary city income tax will expire, and the city's revenues for operations and transformation will fall by $9 million a year. The good news is that we are also about halfway to meeting our financial goals. We're beginning to see the return on our investments. For example, after thorough review from both outside experts and our employees, the police chief and the fire chief, who collectively are responsible for 67% of the general fund budget of the city of Grand Rapids, the chiefs provided transformation plans that will significantly reduce costs while maintaining the same service performance levels. Also, 92% of non-public safety services that are funded by general tax dollars are online to meet their targets. 2 of the past 3 years, we have lowered water and sewer rates. Should I say that again, commissioners? 2 of the last 3 years, we've lowered water and sewer rates. The city's new curbside recycling program with the MyGR City Points has increased the tonnage recycled by residents by 80% and lowered refuse tonnage by 13%. And the city's new pay-as-you-throw smart cart refuse program has offered several new options to residents to better manage their refuse costs. Over the next 2 years, the city will continue our sharp focus on transforming city operations to become more fiscally sustainable by June 30th of 2015. Now, before I conclude this speech, let me tell you about one more planning process, one of the most important land use planning processes, I would argue, that this city has ever undertaken. For many of you, the Michigan Street Corridor Planning Initiative has probably passed beneath your radar. However, I'm convinced that the plan that will emerge from this 18-month-long planning process will fundamentally change the face of Michigan Street, which we've come to know as the Medical Mile, and will even bring more vibrancy to this already burgeoning area of our city and its surrounding neighborhoods. There has been an extensive public involvement process, and the findings thus far reinforce our community's vision of creating a multimodal environment to ensure that everyone has access to our high-quality medical facilities and educational institutions. Michigan Street is a critical regional employment center that has generated tens of thousands of jobs. We want to see this growth continue. What will the next $1 billion of investment and development on Michigan Street look like? This coming year, you will hear of exciting recommendations coming out of the planning process, such as a cycle track on Lyon Street. If implemented soon, it will be the first in Michigan. This two-way bike system will dedicate a vehicle lane, travel lane for bicycles only. The Rapid will begin to construct the new BRT stations on Ransom and Michigan. To provide high-frequency transit services. And planners are already working with developers to create a dense, mixed-use environment that will improve pedestrian safety and comfort. Plans will be unveiled that transform redevelopment sites along the corridor into places for shopping, living, and offices. The plan's goals will not only influence what happens on Michigan Street itself, but downtown, North Monroe, and the near west side. What if we added 10,000 residents to these areas to reduce the number of people who are commuting into the city? What if we had a 10% goal of a mode shift that encouraged people to get out of their cars and choose transportation alternatives that increase physical activity and improve health in our city? What if these efforts created the tipping point for a grocery store or a long-desired retail center? These goals to be set as part of the Michigan Corridor planning process will have a rippling effect that will improve the lives of all Grand Rapidians. Because of this, I'm encouraging planners to use the input gathered from this process to serve as a launching point for a downtown planning effort. It's time to begin the conversation, not just about what happens on the hill, but also in the valley. Future development of our downtown, which has become the region's downtown, and particularly the banks of the Grand River, merit thoughtful and intentional action by the public and the private sectors, informed by the region's residents, to continue our positive momentum. We need to leverage, maximize new opportunities, be forward-thinking in our continuous work to make Grand Rapids the most livable city in America. Now I'm ready for the next hour. So 3 weeks ago, as Dr. Ender said, we ended up on some lists. We ended up on the Bill Moyers list of the dozen most sustainable cities in the United States, and the second was the Forbes list of happiest places to work in America. The only thing that surprised me about these recognitions was that it took Moyers and Forbes this long to figure it out. Remember when Newsweek magazine called us a dying city? Yeah. Hey, for that matter, do you remember Newsweek magazine? The Grand Rapids Business Journal printed a comprehensive list of accolades that Grand Rapids has received since the Newsweek slam. Business Journal forgot a couple, but I'm happy to add them. Best places to live in America by Relocate America magazine. Best places for raising a family by Forbes. Best cities to retire in by Where to Retire magazine. Brookings Institute listed us among the top 10 comeback cities in America. U.S. Chamber of Commerce gave us the Siemens Award for Most Sustainable City. And as Dr. Ender mentioned, the U.S. Conference of Mayors last year gave us their first place Environmental and Climate Protection Award. We're listed as in the top 10 urban fisheries. Did you know this? Top 10 urban fisheries in America by Fly Fisherman magazine. And, of course, who can forget? Beer City, USA. A lesser city than ours would sit on its laurels, content with the attention of the nation. But this is a city driven by what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the fierce urgency of now. We feel the urgency of a generation of youth facing difficult and uncertain times. We feel the urgency of the mothers who have lost children to gun violence. We feel the urgency of an economy struggling to burst the shackles of recession. We feel the urgency born of a warming planet. We feel the urgency of the immigrant longing to fit into her adopted home. We feel the urgency of a neighborhood seeking to redefine itself. We feel the urgency, the fierce urgency of now. And it's for times like this and places such as this that we were born. So let us use this moment to rededicate ourselves. You've been sitting a long time. Those who are able, please stand. And I want you to repeat after me. This is our Grand Rapids. I pledge to her my energy, my creativity, my time and my passion. Together we will reach new heights. Together we will overcome great obstacles. This is our Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids, you are beautiful. You are worthy of our dreams. And in our Grand Rapids, we know how to work together to make those dreams reality. Thank you very much.